The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Cameron Gorgonpour. He used to be the Director of Transformational Innovation, United States Air Force, and currently he is a principal of a newly formed company, and the company is Wooden, W-O-D-E-N. Cameron, how are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Well, because this is radio and because I'm obsessive compulsive and people are going to try to find you on LinkedIn, what you want to do is type in Cameron, C-A-M-R-O-N. That's Cameron. That's easy. Last name is Gore, G-O-R-G-U-I-N, Poor, P-O-U-R. So you can find him on LinkedIn. You can find his website and have all kinds of fun. So, Cameron, I read the stuff you've written, and I'm just amazed at some stuff you've come up with. Tell us about your background and how you wound up being the Director of Transformational Innovation. I mean, that sounds like Ben Franklin or something, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what happens when people give me the ability to create my own title.
Whoa!
I'm California native. I grew up in Southern California. Went to school up in Berkeley for my undergrad and graduate degree, mostly a scientist and engineer by training. Though when I was an undergrad, I started teaching courses, undergraduate and graduate level courses at Berkeley.
In what field?
A field called bioastronautics, so it's all about human spaceflight. And while I was doing that, I started a nonprofit called SOAR that ultimately ended up opening a couple of charter schools with NASA in Oakland, California. Then 2008 rolled around and the presidential election was picking up, and I felt morally compelled to engage. So I went and I stepped away from school for a little bit, went and joined the Obama campaign, ended up in Virginia, and really never actually moved back to California from there. I finished up my doctorate, but it was while living here on the East Coast. And shortly after I got my PhD, in May of 2010, and in July, the White House called me up and said, "Hey, you wanna go?"
Hey, but you're a smart guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way that went down is somebody in their presidential personnel office stumbled across my resume and thought it was interesting.
It is interesting. Fascinating. Yeah.
It's like I had great connections or anything like that. It was a pretty interesting process. So they called me up and say, "Hey, are you interested in interviewing with the Air Force?" I'm like,
what in the world?
Yeah. So the answer when the White House calls you is,
of course,
at least for me in that administration was, I would like to interview. So I went and bought a suit and went down, and then the rest is history. So they.
So you dragged you out of California. That's hard.
Well, I never went back. I moved out here and one thing led to another, and I got a job in D.C. That allowed me to finish my Ph.D., while I was working, and then the White House call came, so I never really had a chance to move back. California is great.
So it's happened. A lot of things change here in the last few months. You change, so you leave the government and you start a little company with a colleague of yours. And so what's the focus of this company, Wooden, W-O-D-E-N?
Yeah, so the focus of the company is really to carry on the same types of work that we started when we were working for the Defense Department, which is really to try and look beyond normal business models in defense and to really come up with new, innovative, clever ways that now on the industry side that we can interface between clients and the government to add value to the types of products and services the Defense Department can acquire. I learned a lot in my time with DOD and especially in this role. So when I started in DOD, it wasn't actually as the Director of Transformational Innovation. It was I was a generic special assistant to the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Installations, Environment, and Logistics.
So how'd you tell your mom that one?
Yeah,
hey, mom, you get
yeah,
a pencil. We'll take a half
job
hour.
Title. Do you think Director of Transformational Innovation is a long title? That one just went on forever.
Went on, yeah.
But in that role, I was on the job for a month, and then my boss, who was responsible for the Air Force's energy policy, was in a meeting with his counterparts in Army and Navy and then Department of Energy. They wanted to talk electric vehicles, and everybody wanted to do something about using DOD's 200,000 vehicle fleet to see what we could do to bring in more EVs. And nobody really had manpower to dedicate to it, except that I was new, and so I didn't have anything on my plate.
Hey, the new guy.
Yeah,
he's the tester.
I had a PhD in human spaceflight, so they said, yeah, that's close enough. and so I became DOD's electric vehicle guy for most of the time that I was there. And then in 2014, you know, it was time for a change. And in talking with folks in the White House and in the Pentagon, we came up with this idea for transformational innovation. The idea there was that, you know, we had better buying power, which is an important acquisition reform initiative that was started by originally Ash Carter before he was Secretary of Defense, and then Frank Kendall carried it on as Undersecretary of Defense. So not to discount the importance of that, but the thought was that if we had a function within the acquisition shop in the Air Force that was really just going for swing for the fences types of ideas, things that you know you're not really going to succeed on maybe most of the time, but those things that you do actually win on will fundamentally change paradigms for how the department does acquisitions. So we created the position shortly after I started. This was June of 2014. The Secretary of the Air Force and my then boss, the Assistant Secretary for Acquisitions, Dr. Bill Plant, handed me the Air Force's signature acquisition reform initiative, which is called Bending the Cost Curve. And so we basically folded all these things together and eventually built out an entire office around me called the Office of Transformational Innovation. And we launched, I don't know, 20-some-odd different acquisition reform efforts, some big, some small, but all really geared towards being collaborative with industry and focusing on I don't want to call them unusual, but out-of-the-box types of ideas. And so anyhow, so Woden, the company that I formed with my colleague Locke Litwer, is really designed to now on the industry side look at some of the things that we started in the Air Force, but also looking at new ideas of how do we take the department's existing authorities and regulations and come up with new business constructs that other people might not have thought of. And so anyhow, so it's a new company. We're plugging forward. We're writing proposals, talking with a bunch of companies, but it's pretty exciting to kind of be on this side of the fence now, trying to work some of the same topics that I did.
Two questions for you. First, have you met Fred Hayes?
Fred Hayes? No, I don't think I have.
Apollo 13. Yeah. He gave me a patch in his jacket once.
Cool. Awesome.
That was really. Turns out there were something I put in a box, and all of a sudden my son said, "Hey, it's worth something. They sell these things on eBay." Who knew that?
Oh, that's awesome.
Secondly, as you were speaking, I was taking notes, and the name that came into my mind was Clayton Christensen in Innovator's Dilemma, and and you know what he says? He said innovation is very hard to come with any big organization, the Air Force, the Army, Ford Motor Company, Seagate Technology, and so what you need is you need a separate group of people that is outside but inside.
Yeah.
And that separate group of people is not going to be plagued or infected with, we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
And so I look at you, I go, you're the guy who Clayton Christensen wrote for.
A lot of the inspiration for creating the office was to basically provide sort of the inside-outside voice. Which, you know, I think it is important for any organization in any context. And, you know, I credit the folks in the Air Force for at least being receptive to hearing different ideas. You know, not that everything that we wanted to do, we got done. But at least that there was a space for us to work. And in fact, the office is still functioning. So and they're still doing great work. So I'm pretty happy that the mission's carried forward. But it's something that I would recommend for any organization. Or if folks listening don't have that function in their organization, they can just contract with Woden, and we'll be happy to to come in and show you some things that you might not have known were really possible.
Well, my traditional joke in the air when people talk about innovation and the military, I see generals put the no in innovation. And I mean, I've had generals on the air here. And, you know, these guys didn't get where they're at by, you know, being easy, and they're pretty hard. And I think the fact that you work with generals and transition and transformation, innovation, I think that puts a lot of stars in your forehead. And people would say, hey, this guy's alive. And he worked with these high-level people. Let's take a little break, come back, talk more about innovation, collaboration, working with companies. And I'd like to find out what kind of public-private partnerships we have in town here, what kind of organizations you work with that maybe can our listeners can join and learn more about innovation and the DOD. Sure. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Cameron Gorgonpour, who is a principal of a company called Wooden, W-O-D-E-N. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Cameron Gorgonpour. He was the Director of Transformational Innovation in the United States Air Force, and now he's involved in a startup in town, and the startup is called Wooden, W-O-D-E-N. And we were talking about bits and pieces of his career, how he wound up from California into the Pentagon, and talked about innovation. And, you know, I go to events all the time, and I meet people who've listened to this interview, and I'm going to an event tomorrow and on Friday. And so when you were with the federal government, when you were with the DOD, and people invite you to ABCD events in the same – so which ones would you choose, and what organizations really kind of reflected your needs best?
Yeah, well, I mean, so in terms of which ones I would go to and which ones I was invited to
– That's the question.
Well, it's funny, you know, when you're – In the Defense Department, you get invited to all sorts of events.
I know.
So yeah, I would go to actually quite a few. I would go to pretty much anything that I was available for if I was invited to speak.
A guy once told me that I'd even go to the opening of an envelope.
If I was invited to speak.
If I was invited, yeah.
If I'm the one that got to open the envelope, or at least read the contents of the envelope. there were a handful of organizations that were kind of go-to organizations, NDIA being probably top among them, National Defense Industries Association. In fact, as Director of Transformational Innovation, because it was part of my task to actively and proactively go out and gather industry feedback, we would often go to NDIA to their existing events, and we would even create our own events with NDIA to help bring in industry folks to give us input on.
Which circles back to the word you know, on radio, it's the phrase that pays, was collaboration.
Yeah.
You just mentioned collaboration. So you can't collaborate by locking yourself in an office in the Pentagon and looking out the window. You have to go out and meet people and ask dumb questions and see who's got what talent set, because there's a wide talent set out there.
Yeah. I for that one, all credit goes to Deborah James, who was the Secretary of the Air Force at the time, Mark Welch, who was the Chief of Staff, and Bill LaPlante, who was the Assistant Secretary for Acquisitions, because they came into those roles with a very clear vision for what they wanted, which is that they wanted to actually go out and talk to people, which apparently for a long time was not the norm.
I met General Lord. Was he there at the time?
Yeah,
I think I remember the name, every distinctive name. You know?
Yeah, he was there. I think I don't want to misstate what he was doing. But yes, he was around at the time for sure.
Well, Cameron's a pretty good writer, and he has a couple articles. He's probably going to get published in the next few weeks, next few months. We'll have to see. One is called On Diversifying the Defense Supply Base. Another one is The Circular Firing Squad of Defense Acquisition Rhetoric. Boy, these titles are – there's going to get a lot of readers just with these titles.
Yeah.
And so what you've done in these, obviously, is you've reflected on your 6 years over that side of the river and said, well, look, here's the real scoop here. You know, this is like – this is like I'm in the classroom a lot. It's okay, no fake. Give me transparency here. Okay. Give us a straight scoop. Lock the door and give us a straight scoop. And that's what this is. It's a straight scoop, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying. And, you know, I think I probably have a couple more articles in me and just, you know.
A couple more hundred.
Yes. Starting the company while trying to write is difficult. So that's why part of the reason why I took a good amount of time off after I left the Air Force in January was to take some time and just to be able to focus on what I'd just done and what I'd just experienced and to put some of these thoughts on paper. So now that I'm in startup mode, again, a little less time to reflect, but I think it's important. It's important for, for myself, frankly, but also for others, hopefully, to get a straight story on at least one person's perspective of what's happening when we talk about acquisition reform, when we talk about, how do we encourage innovation in the defense sector? Having lived it for a number of years and been specifically charged with trying to bring more innovation into the department, hopefully it'll at least spur conversation. I think that's more than anything what's important.
Well, diversifying, that's a nice emotional term. Mm-hmm. And the last time I was physically in the studio, I had this big Marine sitting there. Then I had a Sikh, and a Sikh had a turban and everything else. Yeah. And I went back and forth. I know a little about the Sikhs. I know a little about Marines, stay away. And went back and forth and back and forth. And I said, you guys are brothers from a different mother. You're exact same personality types, mm-hmm. and just you look different. Yeah. And so I tried to bring in as many diverse. In fact, I'm involved with a lot of stuff. I have a podcast dedicated to startups in this town.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important. However, it's one thing to stand up at this microphone and talk about it. It's another thing to have them involved in the procurement process. Very difficult to have diverse suppliers, especially in that limited world over there in the Pentagon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't actually have an open marketplace for the Defense Department.
I know.
It's a lot more like a nationalized system, except that it's not fully nationalized. You put in layer upon layer of regulation and statute and process, and it creates a system where, very few companies are willing and able to actually form their entire business around this model. And when they do, they so closely conform to each other and to the people in the department. In fact, there's a lot of obvious exchange of personnel between the Defense Department and industry in this sector that the danger, and I would suggest the reality, is that while there are very, very smart people, passionate, dedicated people who I love, the danger is that there's a very clear echo chamber of ideas. And so, by so constricting the nature of companies that can work with the Defense Department and the broader defense community, I think that we're doing disservice to the cause of innovation.
And when I think about cybersecurity, which is a hot topic for everyone, many, many times the innovators in cybersecurity are not the traditional bachelor's degree, master's degree. It's maybe a gamer who got mad, mm-hmm. and then picked up this and that, and then learned about this, taught himself encryption, mm-hmm. maybe got a patent, and learned this and learned that, and then got involved in a band, and involved in music,
sure.
and then came up with something. And that's where the innovation comes from in cryptography and cybersecurity. And I think that's the only way you're going to be able to beat the opponent is having very flexible and loose and very comfortable with diversity.
I think there are certainly great cyber professionals, in uniform and civilians working in the Defense Department now. But to your point, those people are of a mold, and there's a whole different realm of folks involved in cybersecurity that we need to engage. And to the department's credit, they've done really awesome things like the Hacking for Defense initiative, where they actually go out and they create bounties for hackers to come in and try and expose flaws in the department's security systems. I think that's important work. The Defense Digital Service, which now I think each of the services has their own version of that, to really apply more of a, I hate to use the term Silicon Valley type mentality, but I mean that's the idea, sort of like a startup software firm type mentality, looking at major weapon systems to see, is what we're doing, is the way we're constructing systems consistent with what is credible and effective in the commercial sector? And are we actually really secure? For all the regulation and the statutes and everything that we do, are we actually secure and really constructing systems in a way that's going to keep bad guys out?
See, that's why they wanted you in, because you could ask those questions. I mean, the people who've been there 15, 20 years, they're going to be a little uncomfortable with asking that question. You're just some guy from California. You got this piece of paper that says you're smart, mm-hmm. and you can come in and ask the obvious. And maybe that is the obvious to quit. Okay, this is checkbox. Is it really preventing anything?
Yeah.
And right. Will some creative person be able to evade that?
Yeah, well, and there's a limited amount of low-hanging fruit, for these types of problems, right? Especially as an outsider, right? Like, as somebody who's tasked to sort of be the outside voice coming in, You know, frankly, I was really impressed with the level of competence, not just in cybersecurity, with really a lot of things related to the defense bureaucracy. But that said, there are a lot of really hard conversations that need to happen and need to continue happening to really help open minds. And, you know, and to me, you know, throwing innovation on my job title it doesn't give me any right to come in and be a disruptor or put all these like hashtag types of phrases after my name. You know, to me, the point of these outside innovation groups is to ensure that there's an open marketplace of ideas more than anything, and that open marketplace isn't tipped in favor of the status quo at all times. And so, you know, certainly all of my ideas weren't the best ideas. I think some were. And I, you know, at least had an opportunity to compete those ideas against more traditional perspectives. And we had wins and we had losses, but at least the forum was there to do that. And I think that that's really important, again, for any organization, any context. You know, I kind of like to think that an organization should scrutinize new ideas proportional to the change that those ideas would cause.
That's interesting. Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about change management, innovation, the federal government, and maybe get some best practices and some of the successes that he's seen over at the Air Force. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Cameron Gorgonpour. He was the Director of Transformational Innovation in the United States Air Force, and currently he's involved in a startup called Wooden. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Cameron Gorgonpour. He is a principal of a company called Wooden, Wooden.one. There's an interesting URL, Wooden.one. And he's just coming off a stint of 6 years over in the Pentagon there, working as the Director of Transformational Innovation, United States Air Force. That title really is an impressive title. You know, I mean, that's like eye candy for engineers. Aerospace engineers would love that. I'm sure an aerospace engineer would get you on an airplane and talk your ear off. Oh, yeah, I have this idea for a wiring for carbon nanotubes. It's blah, 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 blah. It's great, great, great. Before the break, we just kind of touched on diversity, and you have such a wide background. And what my listeners are thinking is, what's that camera? What does he read? How does he keep up with things? I mean, so I'm asking, is there blogs you read? Are there books, podcasts, or how do you keep up?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I read these days because I'm busy starting this company, mostly just trying to keep up on the news, tracking my LinkedIn feed to see what interesting is happening out in the business world that might be relevant. You know, we talked about the innovator's dilemma as one of the inspirations for this transformational innovation role. The other one that just one of my favorite books is Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow, which is basically a summary of his career in creating the field of behavioral economics, which is really just it's fascinating. And I love that stuff. So, you know, trying to understand a little bit about organizational theory and organizational management is, you know, that's what I do for fun.
Yeah. My son just handed me a book yesterday he wants to read. It's about biography of Hirohito. He said, Dad, this is important for you to read.
Okay.
And it'll get you outside your inside and you'll think differently about things. And so so I'm going to read it after I'm reading two or three other things. But I guess the idea is that it gets you out of the standard way of thinking.
Yeah.
And you go, well, I never thought maybe this is an approach that might work. So
yeah,
that's interesting. You know, when it comes to diversity, I was thinking about Toledo, Ohio.
Okay.
Ohio, named after the city in Spain, the famous city in Spain. And Toledo, Ohio had a glass manufacturing business that was based on feeding Detroit. That's what they did. And so Akron, Ohio, was the rubber capital of the world. They fed tires for Detroit, and Toledo fed glass. And then places like Pittsburgh would produce the steel. And so there's a network there. And so this is much like the federal government having businesses that are dedicated just to serving their needs. And I'm sure those glass companies included didn't know anything at all except about windshields and back windows and everything else. And so sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. What happens is when the car industry goes down, then the people in Toledo have to have new applications for their glass. And so I'm looking at, you know, what you call non-traditional defense contractors and how they can do business with the federal government if they've never done them before, or if they make
make a transition away. It's a touchy subject, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, so I actually don't call them non-traditional defense contractors. That's what the statute calls them, and it's among the most ironic governmental terms ever conceived of. So you were telling me at the break about your class and some of the graduate students you work with. Here's a good task for them. Come up with a better term than non-traditional defense contractors. Because that term, when you read the statute and the corresponding regulations, what it actually refers to is every company in America minus like 50, right? Like every company.
Except the usual suspects in this town.
Yeah, right. So outside of D.C., non-traditional defense contractors is just American industry. And so few companies actually work directly for the government that they would not be considered non-traditional. So it's one of those ironies. So I've taken to just calling them non-defense companies. But the reality is, yeah, that they're out there. They have real, you know, especially when we get into the tech space, but not even really specifically in the tech space, though especially. There are a lot of companies out there, and people think of non-traditionals or non-defense companies, as I'm calling them, as, you know, these sort of Boston or Austin tech startup software companies. But the fact is that Apple is a non-traditional defense contractor by the way that's defined. Google, you know, like you're talking about the vast majority of America's intellectual capital is not within the defense sector. And so, you know, that's not to say that our traditional defense prime companies are bad or not innovative or not tech savvy, because clearly they are. But the cause of diversity is about bringing different perspectives and again, creating a marketplace of ideas that can be weighed against one another. And so when you so restrict competition among industry, you are not just restricting the offering of products and services, you're restricting the offering of ideas. And that can be technologies and that can be business models, which is why I say it's not even just a tech company issue, right? There might be, you know, a gardening company in Des Moines that has some great new business model that would never even know about because, you know, they just don't have an opportunity to do business with the government or they don't have an avenue in. And so I think that, not so much of an indictment on anybody who is currently doing business with the government. It's really about just broadening our perspectives. And frankly, when you broaden perspectives, everybody benefits, including the traditional companies that work with us. I know that can be hard to feel and to absorb, you know, especially for smaller companies that are trying to make their way into the department and, you know, or some established companies that are trying to protect their market share and satisfy shareholders. You know, it's hard to step back and say, hey, you know, opening the aperture a bit will help everyone. But, you know, it's a fact. It's a fact in the defense marketplace. It's a fact in the commercial marketplace. It's the fact when it comes to workforce diversity that, you know, part of the reason why companies and organizations and academic institutions promote diversity isn't, you know, just because they're trying to promote some sort of political sense of economic fairness. It's because bringing diverse people together in a company or an organization helps come to better outcomes. And there's a slew of research.
Because you win. That's why you're diverse. You want to win.
Yeah, exactly. You want better products. You want better services. You want better ideas. You want to stay ahead of your competitors. And here, when we're, you know, as related to the defense sector, we have an immense pool. The entirety of American industry, minus roughly 50 companies, we don't actually access their ideas and their thoughts.
It's like going to a library and, okay, here's a library. You can read any of the books on these shelves and you're limited to this one shelf, but there's 50
yeah,
acres
yeah, right,
of books,
yeah.
But this is one shelf. Just these 50 companies who are federal contractors have all the answers for you.
Yeah,
exactly. Just go to them. They have all the answers, right?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
I don't know. Yeah. So tell me about bending the cost curve. What's that all about?
Yeah, well, so bending the cost curve was an initiative that was created before I came into the role as Director of Transformational Innovation. This was launched by the then Secretary of the Air Force and then Chief of Staff of the Air Force. And again, the idea was that they wanted, Air Force leadership wanted an acquisition reform initiative that was action-oriented and that was collaborative with industry. And so it started, again, before I got into the role, it started as just a series of discussions. I think the first two topics were information technology, and then how do you reduce the time to award sole source contracting. So very high level kind of IT stuff, and then like way in the weeds.
Yeah. Reduce gas mileage for a fleet of vehicles. Wow.
Yeah. That's hard. Yeah. So it's that was sort of the after, but it was really just a set of discussions. I came in into the role and with the task to be action oriented. So I took those projects, added roughly 20 more projects, and really turned everything into doing stuff. So, so we did a whole study on what's called the Truth in Negotiations Act, which is a riveting piece of statute that deals with compliance issues for companies receiving sole source contracts. So that was one end of the spectrum, way in the weeds. And then we went way in a different direction. We created a whole new acquisition process for open architecture systems, which we called open system acquisition. That uses a specialized authority called Other Transaction Authority to help the department begin to be able to execute contracts that don't have to follow federal acquisition law or regulation. So Other Transaction Authority is a very powerful authority. And in fact, some of the work that we're doing at Woden is around leveraging that authority to help the department do better business with a broader swath of industry.
We're going to have to take a break and come back. What I want my listeners to do right now is go to Google and type in defense acquisition disaster and find out how many hits you get. And that's what we'll talk about when we come back. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Cameron Gorgonpour. He is a principal of a company called Woden, Woden.one. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Cameron Gorgonpour. He was the Director of Transformational Innovation, U.S. Air Force, and now he's a principal of a company, a startup, called Woden, Woden.one, and that's the first domain for me in .one. We've been talking about innovation, the federal government. And before the break, I asked my audience to go to Google and type in defense acquisition disaster, and I got 3 million hits. So why would even someone type that in?
Well, I've only read about half of those hits. there's a storied tradition of bashing the defense acquisition system and the people in it, which is... Certainly there are things that folks would consider failures. A lot of times I'm not sure how fair it is exactly. I think one of the things that I was most surprised with when I entered the role as Director of Transformational Innovation and I was handed Bending the Cost Curve as an initiative to run, my first question was, what's the cost curve?
Fair question.
It's
a fair. Move the chair. Where's the chair?
Yeah, right. So I was very, very surprised that from a historical perspective, I say we. It's not really just the department. It's the broader defense community has, in my view, a very poor handle on whether the money we're spending today. Results in more or less value than it did 10, 20, 30 years ago. So the rhetoric is always that, everything sucks. There's so much more regulation. Look at F-35. Look at this program. Look at that program. But at the end of the day, without an objective measure of value received for dollars spent, these are really very subjective conversations that don't do a heck of a lot to improve the state of defense acquisition. And so, that's one of the things that I really, really wanted to do, and we just never were able to pull together the funding and the contracts to make it happen. I wanted to actually go back and do sort of a longitudinal study of defense spending in certain areas to see, take fixed-winged aircraft. Are we actually getting more capability for a dollar spent than we were 10, 20, 30 years ago or not? For all we know, and for all the F-35 program has been bashed, it could conceivably be the greatest financial investment the department's ever made. What if the F-35 capability is enough to maintain air superiority for the next 50 years? Right.
Well, you can make that argument for the B-52, and it has, and it worked.
Well, yeah. So B-52 is another program that we worked on. In that case, we were tasked with identifying ways to innovative acquisition approaches to re-engine the B-52. So the B-52, for folks who may not know, is, I think its first flight was in the early 60s. That's first combat flight anyway. It was in the early 60s. And it is still operating today. It is expected to continue flying through the year 2050 and beyond. And
the aerospace engineers love it.
Yeah. Well, it was the airframe is solid. It's like a truck. It's a truck for all sorts of weapons that you can put on that thing. And it's loud and it's scary and it, shoots black smoke out the back. And it's a real sight. But today in 2017... the B-52 has the exact same engines, not the same type of engines, the exact same engines as when the B-52 was first flown. And it's been this sort of perennial challenge, we tracked back to, I think, the mid-90s, and that wasn't even the beginning of studies of how to re-engine the B-52. I think that the first studies on re-engineing the B-52 were back in the 1970s. And nobody could really figure out how to do it. So we went out to industry and proposed a few things that the Air Force is chewing on right now. But what's interesting about the B-52 is one of the first reactions when people hear about B-52 and how old it is, it's like, oh my gosh, how are we keeping this thing alive so long? But in my view, that was one of the most innovative projects that we worked on. We just, in 2015, awarded something like, I say we, the Air Force awarded something like $50 billion to Northrop Grumman to create the next generation of bomber, the long-range strike bomber. If we knew that investment of $50 billion would result in a weapon system that isn't just operational but militarily relevant for 100 years, we would think that was the greatest investment we've ever made. And so with B-52, people huff and puff, it's such a shame that we're keeping these old systems alive. Well, no, it's awesome that we're keeping those old systems alive. As long as they work and they scare bad guys and they kill bad guys, that's what you really want in a defense investment. But it takes creativity. And you need to figure out how to keep some of these things going and upgraded and modernized. Without siphoning off funding from future investment. And so to me, that's where a lot of the innovation really lies, is in the old stuff.
Where does open systems architecture fit in with the discussion about innovation?
Well, so open architecture systems, it's sort of a buzzword. Sometimes they call it modular open system architectures, or MOSA. There's a lot of statute that compels the department to explore modular open systems for its weapon systems, and particularly for its IT systems. And the idea is that you want to get away from proprietary systems where you're, latched to an incumbent forever. So you want to create things modularly with open interfaces where you can kind of plug and play different capabilities. It also helps with modernizing, particularly around information systems, where a piece of software might be awesome right now, but 2 years from now or less, it's going to be irrelevant. So rather than having to replace an entire system, you want to be able to plug and play. One of the key things about open architecture systems that in my view, grossly under-discussed and undervalued, is that when you have multiple systems working off of the same architecture, that improves your ability to share data and diffuse data between different platforms. And that's a capability that we have in certain contexts now, the ability to communicate between systems with sophisticated sensors and communications equipment, but it's grossly expensive and oftentimes grossly inefficient to do that. So creating common architectures for two different jets, or a jet and a submarine, or a satellite, so having common languages and interfaces is something that is critical, not just for each individual system, but for our system of systems.
System of Systems Security Consortium.
Wow.
I did my research. So that's quite a name.
Yeah, well, we didn't pick that name. That's an independent company.
Like King of Kings. I mean, wow, the System of Systems Security Consortium.
Yeah, they
what
do
the heck
a good
job.
They do a good job. I do think they need a shorter URL. what you're referring to, System of Systems Security Consortium, SOSEC as they go, won the competition to manage the Air Force's open system acquisition vehicle. And so the vehicle itself is, I mentioned in the last segment, other transaction authority, which folks can look up, or they can contact us at Woden. We'll tell you all about it. Basically, it's for prototyping new capabilities. It can be hardware, software. It could be business process. So there's a lot of flexibility in that authority. Army, about 15 years ago, created this consortium construct where instead of issuing another transaction type contract to an individual company, they do it to a pool of companies that are interested in working in a given subject area. And then the government can issue task orders to that consortium. It's actually, it sounds way in the weeds. It's actually a really incredible contracting tool that acts a lot like a commercial marketplace once you understand it. So we created our own in the Air Force. That's that OSA vehicle. We competed to industry to see who would manage it, and this firm, SOSEC, won the competition to manage that particular vehicle. Interesting, though, that in this year alone, there have been 6 or 7 government solicitations to create new consortia using this model.
Aha.
So in...
You stumbled on something then, huh?
In tactical... Yeah, well, 2 of them are from the Air Force, and then Army has another 2 or 3 that they've either awarded or in various stages of solicitation. Special Operations Command had a request for information. Navy has a request for information. So it's an increasingly popular model.
So if people want to have more information from you, what's the website they should go to again, please?
Yeah, woden.one, woden.one. Feel free to reach out. You can get more information on the work that we're doing on other transaction authority. There's our contact information there.
Maybe links to future articles we'll be publishing, huh?
That's the idea. We'll have blog posts up pretty soon. And it's generally going to be a resource for us to help share information about, again, innovative ideas in how to do business with the Defense Department and other federal agencies as well.
Great. And this is John Gilroy. This is not my day job. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to Google, type in John Gilroy, the Oakmont Group, and find out about all kinds of adventures that I'm currently participating in. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest was Cameron Gorgonpour. He is a principal of a startup called Woden, WODEN.ONE. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.